Welcome to the 68th episode of the Jewish Drinking Show. I'm your host, Rabbi Drew Kaplan, and I'm very excited for this episode on wine at Bris Milah featuring Rabbi Chaim Leiter.
Welcome, everybody, to this episode of the Jewish Drinking Show. I'm your host, Rabbi Drew Kaplan. I'm very excited to welcome first-time guest, Rabbi Chaim Leiter. Rabbi Leiter, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. My pleasure. So for those less familiar with Rabbi Leiter, he is many things. He received his rabbinic ordination from Yeshivat HaMiftar in Israel. He also got specific as a like Mila ordination, right? As a Mohel?
Yeah. Is there a term? Hasmacha. You're Musmach as a Mohel. So I received it from my teachers.
Yeah. A Mohel Musmach, right? Ordination for that. He, in addition to doing weddings for Chuppot, so he'll do weddings in Israel for you, but more pertinent to our conversation today is that he started an organization called Magen HaBrit, which advocates for Brit Milah and educates parents on safe options for Brit Milah, and really interestingly, connecting people the world over to Mohalim. So it's not just education, but something that I think even beyond where you are in Israel, it helps people connect to actually getting Brit Milah for their sons.
Yes, absolutely.
Awesome. Okay, so there's a lot of Milah talk that's been coming out of my mouth, which brings us to the topic of what does Milah have to do with drinking? And it actually, so the ritual of Brit Milah is a well-known ritual with so many Jewish men over the centuries, millennia even, having received this ceremony. Well, and I think people know wine pops up during the ceremony. And while the topic of wine at life cycle rituals, I did discuss on the 35th episode of the Jewish Drinking Show when we had guest Rabbi Ivy Feingold, that was really sort of tip of the iceberg stuff. And I'm very excited to do a deeper dive in this conversation with Rabbi Leiter here, who is himself a Mohel and has, I don't know, hands-on experience with Mila, as it were. All right.
Should I give a little overview?
Yeah. So I think people have been to Brit Milah here and there, but I think it's helpful just for our context. So Rabbi Leiter, can you give us a broad overview of, you know, what are the steps? What's the typical procedure? Not the in-depth medical stuff, just what happens step by step, right, of the Brit Milah.
So basically, what's nice is there are a lot of people who are doing it now, like myself included, who sing and try and, you know, add a little bit of spirituality to the ceremony itself. And I once met with Rav Moshe Tendler, and he actually gave me a little tochacha and was like, the Brit Milah ceremony is beautiful enough. You don't have to sing. And I tend to disagree with him on that, but I'll take you through the step by step.
I'm gonna come back to that because of the text I saw about singing. I think singing is very important when we talk about Brit Milah.
Yes, I agree.
And specifically about drinking at a Brit Milah.
Yes. Not if you're the Mohel. The Mohel must not drink. That's first and foremost. You should be as sober as possible when you're doing the bris. That's number one. Mm-hmm. Number two, where the whole ceremony itself begins. I mean, after you've checked the baby is ready, everything's cleaned, ready to go. The mother starts with the baby on a pillow. And it's actually called kvaterin. Mm-hmm. And when we are not in the midst of a global pandemic, we have many options for what's called kvaterin. It could be that the mother gives the baby to a couple, right, to a female friend, and then to a male friend who usually are trying to conceive. There's a skula that if they get the baby and it's passed through them, that they will hopefully conceive soon thereafter. I want to put a little disclaimer on that one should always be sensitive to the fact that although it is a skula for people, if people have been trying to conceive for a long time, they might have gotten this honor many, many times, and it's no longer feeling like a wonderful uplift. It might feel like a little bit of a downer.
Just not everybody may be so up on their Hebrew listening to this. Segula, I want to say a good omen, maybe?
Good omen. I think a good omen is a good translation.
Yeah.
Yes. So the good omen that they would get would hopefully help them conceive. Now that usually goes, say, from mother to female counterpart of that couple to the male counterpart of the other couple. And then the male counterpart gives the baby to the father. That's sort of the classic kvatrin. Mm-hmm. But, and kvatr is Yiddish. The Yiddish for pillow. I think it just means pillow, but don't quote me on that. But it can also be done by many, many people. It can be the whole family, from grandmother down to, you know, children who are existing at this point, all the way to the father. And the when the father gets the baby, there's a little bit of a difference in the ceremony in Israel versus Chutz La'aretz, and outside of Israel. In Israel, when the father gets the baby, he says Shema Yisrael, and he says a couple of other prayers while holding the baby on the pillow. In Chutz La'aretz, generally speaking, it's not done. I think Chabad might do it, but generally speaking, it's not done. It's just the baby would go straight to what's called the Kiseh Eliyahu, which is the chair of Elijah. Mm-hmm. And everyone thinks that the chair of Elijah is this majorly mystical thing. And it might very well be, but really it's just like a ladder. So I don't have to be stooped over the entire time. It's a higher chair.
There's a practical reason.
There's a practical reason. Right? That's why I always tell people the Kiseh Eliyahu was really for me, not as much for the baby. It's just to help me because I'm 6 feet and I don't have to, you know, double over trying to.
Although let's be honest, the baby does benefit.
Oh yes. Oh yes. It's a benefit for everyone.
That's yes. True. It's a win-win.
It's a win-win. So once the father finishes saying his prayer in Israel, the baby is then taken, and there, sometimes these honors are given out. So somebody can come take the baby from the father, put the baby onto the chair. Then I say a prayer myself. And the prayer I say is actually, for some people, it's controversial. The prayer I say is asking Eliyahu to actually give me strength to do the Brit Milah to the best of my ability. And I have a colleague actually in New York who will not say it because there's never a time, he said, in any other context where we pray to anyone other than God. And so he does not feel comfortable saying this. Just an interesting little note there, side note. So I do like to say that prayer because I feel like it's a good moment for tefillah for other people and for myself. So I like to give that little tefillah right before. Then someone can take the honor of lifting the baby up. And then the major honor is given, which is called the sandak, which is and then the godfather. That's a bad translation. It's the person who holds the baby during the bris. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people think it's just the baby on the lap and I just sort of sit there and twiddle my thumbs. No, the sandak is on duty. The sandak's job is really to hold the legs of the baby while the procedure is being done, and making sure that he's not in any harm in that sense. But there are people who actually love that godfather joke and they'll whistle the theme song.
It's a memorable theme song.
It is. It's quite
haunting. And it's a real earworm too. It gets stuck in the.
Yes, totally. Totally. So then the procedure at that point is done. We're not going to go into full detail on that. And then when that's finished, we move into the part which is probably going to be our focus today, where we, once the baby is fully wrapped back up in his everything, diaper, pants, and everything, somebody holds the baby. That's the ma'amad habrachot. And then there's the person who is mevarech, the person who says the bracha. And that is done over a kos of grape juice or wine, usually. And then I'll sort of just take you to the end. And then we'll come back. I'm just going to take you through those other steps and then we'll come back into deep dive. Gotcha. Yeah. No. Just so everybody gets a full sense of what the ceremony is. So then the naming is done. The baby receives his name through this blessing, and we'll talk more about the blessing in a second. And then when that's finished, I do a mishaberach usually for the baby that he should have healing through this process. And then the mother can do, when there are 10 men present, the mother does the Birkat HaGomel for surviving a harrowing experience, which birth is considered one of those experiences, even today. And then the last piece, we say Aleinu, which we say at the end of almost every tefillah. And there's actually a big question mark for me over that. I actually think we do that because it used to be done at the end of the service. Like it was done, and then the last thing, Aleinu, got tacked on to the end of this ceremony because that's what we would have done at the end of Shacharit or at the end of Mincha or whatever we were doing at that time. Mm-hmm. And then the last piece, somebody says Kaddish, right? So if there are mourners, it's Kaddish is said. And then somebody actually says Mazel Tov and everyone starts dancing around and singing and doing all that. Okay, cool. So that's the ceremony.
Awesome.
I hope you've been enjoying this episode so far. I wanted to break in and let you know that if you have any ideas, you have any suggestions, you have any recommendations, please let me know. You can email me at drew@jewishdrinking.com, and I'm very excited to hear your suggestions.
Well, thank you for that overview. And obviously, we're now getting into specifically the wine aspect, the drinking aspect. Otherwise, what are we doing here for Jewish drinking? Why do we have it? Like, why do we have wine at the Brit Milah? Brit Milah obviously goes back literally thousands of years to Avraham in the book of Genesis. It goes super far back. It precedes even the Jewish people, right? Before they even get down to Egypt. Wine's involvement, however, is not that old. In fact, it doesn't even go as far back as the Talmud. It's not in the Talmud at all as far as being part of the Milah ceremony. In fact, it's a really fascinating comment that there's a famous rabbi. His name is Rabbi Yosef Karo, for okay. people out there. And so he wrote a bunch of things, but his most famous work is called the Shulchan Aruch, the set table. But mm-hmm. before this work, he wrote a work called Beit Yosef, or Joseph's House. And in there, he's considering this practice of wine. And he says, well, you know, it's really funny, actually, because I looked. He's good at research. He yes. said, look, it's not in the Talmud. It's not there at all. It's not in Rif, referring to Rabbi Alfasi, and it's not in Maimonides. It's none of these foundational, like, early works, and yet everybody seems to do it. Because he's nice. Referencing all these other medieval works, and he says people are doing it left and right. It's just common practice in just as part of any Brit Milah. It's almost as if he's, and yet for him, tracing the history, there's no clear origin. It's a dubious history. And yet no one really cares. Let's have wine and a Brit Milah. Okay, great. So he proffers a reason, and he says, look, he quotes from Rabbi Mordechai Ben Hillel, who was a 13th century German rabbi, who says maybe it comes from ultimately this text in the Talmud, and for those keeping score at home, it's in Brachot 35a, of Rabbi Shmuel and Bar Nachmani, who quoted Rabbi Yonatan, who said that we basically only sing song over wine.
Nice.
And then quotes from the book of Judges. Now, that's it for me, when you started earlier saying singing at a Brit Milah, and I thought, oh my gosh, that connects directly to yep. both this Talmudic passage and then also what Rabbi Karo quotes, this Rabbi Mordechai Ben Hillel, as saying is that is why we have wine here at a Brit Milah. It is because of this song aspect, this, and maybe a different word for song might be praise, right? We're praising God at this time, and that is why we have wine, that wine's a necessity. How could we have a life cycle ritual without wine, without, you know, if we're praising God, wine is a necessity.
Well, in the Sefer that I was looking at, the Sefer that I've been pulling a lot of this out of will be coming from what's called Sefer Brit HaLevi, and one of my, the Rosh Kollel of my of Yeshiva Tamiftar, when I graduated, just handed mm-hmm. me this book. It was such a nice moment, and he actually dedicated it and knew I was going to be a Moyal. It's got a lot of stuff about Mila, so I'm going to be pulling from there a couple of times. Great. He connects this back, and this might have been what Rav Yosef Karo was talking about. Mm-hmm. He connects it back to the Levi'im. That the Levi'im, there was always...
Oh, they sang.
They sang their shir, and I believe it was Shir Shel Yom, every day was over a kos. And I thought, that's insane. I mean, we do it in the morning at Shacharit. I could not do a kos every morning. I don't know about you. I'm not a big drinker. But I could not see doing it over a kos every day. But he said, Ein Shira, exactly like that. Ein Shira, a little bit, right? You have to have it over a kos. That's number one. Number two... I have a great story. I have to share it.
Yeah,
When I first arrived to Israel, and then first made my way to Jerusalem when I met my wife, I started studying with a late rabbi whose name was Joseph Yurovetsky. He studied under the Rav Soloveitchik. And his chavruta, for those who are keeping their scorecards going, was Rabbi Lukstein, Haskell Lukstein. Mm-hmm. And he told me this great story about how when they were studying for their midterm, or I think it was their final, whatever it was, in Rav Soloveitchik's class, the thing that they were learning at that moment was that you can take any bracha and you can elevate it by doing it over a kos. Okay? That's mm-hmm. it. Rav Soloveitchik Paskin, that if you take anything, any bracha at all, and you do it over a cup of wine, it elevates that bracha. Hmm. They took a break for a minute. Rabbi Lukstein came out of the bathroom and held his hand like he was holding a cup of wine and said, Baruch, like that, at full volume. Everybody was on the floor. Okay, I don't know if you're supposed to elevate your bathroom bracha on a coast of wine, but Rabbi Lichtstein, he was good like that. He still is good like that. So, but that's basically, I think, the idea, what you were saying. Anything can be elevated, right? You have this moment where now you're going to say a blessing. You're going to say a blessing where we actually delayed, right? If everything were equal, right? You know, when we have when a baby girl is born, right? We rush to give her name as soon as we possibly can. Could be that that she was born on Monday morning. Somebody will go to hear Torah reading even that morning and she gets her name right away, right? Because mm-hmm. There's this whole thing about Shadim and not having the name and right, that all that stuff is swirling around. But we're particular about this because Avraham didn't become Avraham until he had his Brit Milah. Therefore, even though all this is swirling around and we're worried about whether or not somebody has their name, how long don't they have their name? How quickly should we give them their name? We still put it off until the bris. So we're about to do this thing where he's finally getting his name. How much more does it get elevated when you do it over a cup? That's the idea.
Nice. Yeah. Yes. All right. So that's the origin. There's no clear origin. It's just that sort of broad-based, we'll just do a blessing over a cup sort of thing.
Just a broad base doing something after you go to the bathroom kind of a thing. Yes, exactly.
All right. So we have, okay. So this sort of strange origin. Then,
right.
Okay. Who drinks? I do want to point out a quick little thing. It doesn't have to really be wine. So everybody talks about wine. Although I did come across the Aruch HaShulchan. So not to be confused with the Shulchan Aruch, but Rabbi Epstein, who passed away about a century ago, he said, look, it can be any other beverage, beer, whiskey.
I see anything but water. Did you see anything but water?
That wasn't in the Aruch HaShulchan, but it makes sense.
In this safe, it sounds like
Havdalah. Exactly. I was thinking exactly. Havdalah, it's same operation off of Havdalah, which is, it has to be a special beverage. Ostensibly, hopefully alcoholic, you know, beer, whiskey, but who knows? Maybe it could be orange juice, I guess, if it really in a pinch.
If you're really in a pinch, exactly. Nice. Yeah. Well played. For the there are so many terms flying right now. I'm trying desperately not to make all the jokes my friends make. But here, I think that's the idea too. And it definitely said that wine, grape juice, you know, the same thing. Yeah. But ostensibly, that's the mina muvchar. That's the best thing to do it over.
Right. And fortunately nowadays, you know, as opposed to, let's say, in the medieval ages or something like that, wine might have been harder to come across. Nowadays, fortunately, it's a lot easier to find, but you never know. Maybe you're in a strange situation. It's just not feasible. But right. I'm going, for our purposes, I'm just going to use wine as a catch-all henceforth.
Works.
Going forward. So who drinks the wine? Who says the blessing? Who drinks the wine? You know, it's funny. The reason I'm asking it, for those who check out the Shulchan Aruch, that's Rabbi Yosef Karo's work, and then the Ashkenazi commentary by Rabbi Moshe Isserles, who is a Krakow rabbi, he said we're accustomed to have the Sondek drink it. And so but then I mentioned this Aruch HaShulchan, he's like, I've never seen anybody do that. So there seems to be different customs in play. What have you seen? What's common practice, Rabbi Leiter?
Let's start with common practice and then we'll sort of backtrack for a second.
Yes, please. Yes.
I think common practice is that the Hamivarech is a person who's given the honor, right? So like I said, I have what I always have is people telling me, I've got so many people coming and so many family members, obviously non-pandemic oriented, and I have to give them all something, otherwise somebody's going to be really mad at me, right? Mm-hmm. And there's actually discussions, we're not going to go into this now, but there are discussions about how many times somebody can be a sandak. And how many times they should be a sandak in the same family, how many times per year. And the whole idea with all of this is to, and there's talk about, you know, how to name the baby, right? Like if you're giving the name as we Ashkenazim do for people who have passed away, they say, oh, it starts on the mother's side first, and then it goes to the father's side. And everything is about trying to eliminate argument. That's really what's happening there.
Good. But peace is when good.
Peace. We love peace in the house and peace outside the house. But here, you'll see, like I said, we have people who carry the pillows. We have people who put the baby on the thing. Then there's a person who's specifically given the honor of doing this blessing, right? Mm. And then, so what happens is that person who does the blessing, that person is the person who drinks tradition. Like that's what's happening now. Mm-hmm. The questions that sort of also swirl around this is who, What do you do, say, if it's a fast day and you're
wait.
Okay, I'm getting far ahead of myself. No, because
that's my mistake for not clarifying on the outline.
That people who the guy who says the blessing, the person who's given that honor, doesn't necessarily have to drink. It could go to the sandak. It could go to a child. It could go to somebody else because it's a birkat shevach, right? And a birkat shevach, and not a birkat mitzvah, right? So this is a blessing.
Or not even a birkat nehanin, right?
Exactly. It's not even about the wine itself. So since it's not even about the fact that you're trying to have the wine itself, as like when I'm sitting around at dinner and I want to make a blessing over the cup of wine, I need to make it over the cup of wine.
That's a nice loophole. Yeah.
Like that. This one becomes, it starts asking the questions, how much do you have to drink? I don't know if you went into this yourself, but how much do you have to drink? Is it a malo lugmav, just a cheekful? What if it isn't a cheekful? What if it's less than a cheekful? All those things, all those questions become relevant because the person doesn't have an obligation to drink wine. It's not like the over the day as much as when we do Shabbos and things like that.
So, I mean, it's interesting talking about quantity. I did see that, so... the Taz, and for those less familiar with these acronyms, Rabbi David Halevi Siegel, a 17th century rabbi. So he quotes our Rabbi Yosef Cairo, who quotes in turn from Rabbi Shlomo Ben Adred, the Rashba, that we're not so concerned about how much quantity of the wine is consumed. That maybe it could be malo lugmav, cheeks full, like the minimum for Kiddush, but at the same time, that doesn't really, Kiddush is more significant as far as a minimum requirement, but here it's just tasting. And you know what? I'm going to go tangent, which is speaking of everybody who's drinking it, there also is a practice of the baby getting some of the wine, right?
Correct.
And I think a lot of people are familiar with this.
Right. So there's a moment where when the baby is getting his name, that it says, in your blood live, right? That's the line that comes. And the mohel is responsible. I mean, it's not life or death if it doesn't happen, but responsible to take a little drop from the cup and put it into the baby's mouth. There's the verse is said twice, and you give two drops into the baby's mouth. In some senses, it might feel, you know, reminiscent of the Pesach Seder, where we take a little bit of wine out of our cup and put it around the rim of the plate, right? But the idea was that the baby gets some because actually, again, this comes all into who drinks, because the blessing's actually for the baby. If the baby could have done it, the baby self, maybe the baby would have made the blessing.
Interesting. So it could be anybody. I mean, it could be the person who's making the blessing, could be the sandek to drink, it could be whomever. Obviously, this baby thing. And I do want to point out how old this custom, this practice of putting it in the baby's mouth. It's unclear who's drinking it, but I think everybody's clear the baby gets some of this wine. He suffered. Nice. So this goes back all the way to, so Rabbi Cairo quotes Rabbi Isaac ben Abba Mari, a 12th century Provençal rabbi, more familiarly known as the Baal HaItur to some people, that seems to be one of the earliest mentions of putting in the baby's mouth is back in the 12th century in France. So that's one of the oldest references to wine at the Brit Milah, is the baby gets some of that, you know, he's 8 days old, he's already getting wine.
Yes, that's
start him young.
In my practice, I have a couple ways to sort of mitigate pain for the baby. And everyone always says to me, you know, why didn't you get, they see, I usually tell people to bring grape juice. I don't tell people necessarily to bring wine because I'm under the impression from all the studying that I've done on this, sugar water, which is what I use, is almost totally enough, as well as we put a topical numbing cream on. Mm-hmm. So he doesn't really need to get fishnicked, but if it is wine, of course, he'll get a little bit, get a couple of drops. That doesn't hurt anybody.
Right.
What was I going to say? So yeah, so this giving is definitely still part of what we do today. It's part of the tradition.
That's probably one of the oldest practices of wine with Brit Milah.
Yes.
The baby boy getting some of that wine.
Yeah, for sure.
I hope you've been enjoying this episode so far. I want to give you a sneak peek into next week's episode on the Drinking and Droshing podcast. Here we go.
I'm going to blow your eventual Noah cocktail, I'm telling you. It's going to get out there.
It's going to get out.
Noah cocktail? What is it, like a Long Island iced tea? Like, what is a Noah cocktail? So
it might end up being that. Okay, you heard it here first, but we're still using it.
It's exclusive.
Exclusive. Right. So you take...
I hope you enjoy that sneak peek of next week's episode. Now back to this week's episode featuring Rabbi Chaim Leiter.
Interesting things also done with the cup. First of all, you know, we always talk, I'm sure you've brought it up at once before, but the idea of having a kos pagum, right? Having a cup that's been blessed over, right? Or having had some drunk from it before. Yes, have we talked about this before?
I actually have not covered it.
Ooh, okay, so I'm just going to cover it really, really minorly in detail. Mm-hmm. But once a cup has a blessing done over it, you're not supposed to make another blessing over it until you've added a little bit to it. Now, this comes into play today very consistently because there are people who believe there are two paragraphs in the naming piece. There's a first paragraph that ends Kore Tabrit, and then the second paragraph is where the name actually comes in. It says
and by saying Koreit HaBrit, that is a blessing. Koreit HaBrit.
Correct. That is the Chatima. That's the seal of the blessing. The conclusion of the blessing. There are those who believe, who have Paskin, that is one blessing, and the second paragraph is another blessing.
Then the Kriyat Hashem, the naming.
The naming section, the second paragraph, is a totally separate blessing. So there are those who drink in the middle of the two paragraphs, and those who wait until the end to drink. If there are those who, and it's, I don't want to say it's a 50-50 split, but I see people doing it a lot. If somebody drinks in the middle, which happened in the bris I did 2 days ago, I have to be ready, on the ready, to grab the cup, fill it up a little bit so that it's now a new, almost considered a new cup, and they can continue on with the second paragraph, and it's not making a blessing over the same cup twice. That's the whole idea of pigima.
Wait, so there's you're saying there's people who have accustomed to drink before the naming, right? And then there's a separate drinking?
Correct. They do. Those people will
separate
drinkings.
They're two separate drinkings versus sometimes just having one.
Correct. There are those who do first paragraph, drink, second paragraph, drink, and they really don't drive probably after that. And then the other people who do the whole two paragraphs and then drink, right? That's one long blessing, okay?
Right, and I would imagine the basis for those who want to drink before the naming, before that Kriyat Hashem, is because the Kriyat Hashem, they would consider to be a significant interruption between saying the Borei Pri HaGafen, the blessing, right? And then that would...
It's an interesting thing because I don't think they say another Borei Pri HaGafen at the end of the second paragraph. I think they consider it still a blessing, even though it doesn't have Borei Pri HaGafen at the beginning. It's crazy, I know. They don't say Borei Pri HaGafen a second time, as far as I've never seen anyone finish the second paragraph and then say HaGafen again and then drink. I've never seen that.
So
unless they mumbled it under their breath and I totally missed it.
No, it's just so fascinating. Why fill it up again?
So
why be worried about a kos pagum, about an incomplete cup, if your drinking has started? Like, it's a continuation rather than an entirely new cup, blessing cup.
So I think that the filling up at that point might also be considered an idea of indicating that these are two separate things. Not necessarily that your drinking has started over again, right? Where you would have to say Borei Pri HaGafen a second.
Yeah.
That it is a continuation, but this is a separate blessing on its own. The second paragraph.
With I do want to point out.
But what's interesting, right?
I was going to point out that in the Aruch HaShulchan, and Rabbi Epstein, who once again, he Russian rabbi, passed away about a century ago. He said these the request of mercy, the naming, not considered a significant enough of an interruption between the blessing over the wine and the consumption of the wine. And so he basically provides that out. He specifically says, don't worry about it. Just you've got your things. We're not going to consider it as an interruption. You're good. One cup. That's all. That's it. One cup.
And this is definitely where the machloket is.
Yeah.
Yep. No, this is definitely where the machloket is. But what's interesting is that you will see people. Okay, so I think there are people who take the cup, number one, and they use it for Birkat Hamazon. Same cup. That's I've seen that plenty of times. They will take the cup, they'll go downstairs, and of course, if they're going to do it for using it for Birkat Hamazon, they will fill up some.
That requires a separate filling, yes.
For sure.
Yeah.
But what's interesting as well is there is another skula, another
positive omen.
Positive omen, right? Of drinking the cup in non-COVID times. Please do not do this now at home. But there are people who will come up and take sips of the kos for fertility, so that they will that again, same idea. I have never seen anyone who comes up to drink when they're saying bread prayer gaffin, fill anything up. No one has done that. I've never seen that.
Hmm.
So the whole idea of saying a blessing on the cup and then you're going to say a blessing on the cup again, I wonder, I didn't do enough research to say whether or not it's more connected maybe to Shabbat. Maybe you have a more of a sense of this than I do. That, you know, if I had a cup and I said Brei Pri Agafen on it on a Thursday, and then somebody else came up and wanted to take a drink, would they really feel a need to fill it up? Again, not much of a drinker myself. Can't right. So that's not happening at a Brit Milah either. Right. Who's fitting to get the blessing? Before we move on, it's actually based. This is a general thing actually. I don't think it's necessarily connected to Brit Milah, but it's coming from Mishlei Kaf Bet verse Tet. Right, 22:9, where it says, "Tov ein rach ki natan milachmo." It's the verse that's being yivarein. Somebody who is of good standing, I guess you could translate that. Considered when you're asked to bless over. You do it. And it says, because why? There are shlosha devarim mikatsrim yamav vishnotav sheladam. There are three things that actually shorten your life. And what are they? Mi shenotnim lo sefer Torah likrot ve'eno kore. Somebody who reads who's been given a sefer Torah but then doesn't read. Koshel bracha ve'eno mevarech. Somebody who's given a cup but doesn't bless. Ve'hamanhigatzmo b'mnot sefer stam likrot ve'eno kore dichti. Okay, it goes on and on. I apologize about the third.
But the second one is the most important. The blessing cup and refusing that is not your life over Jordan. Yep.
Yeah, we don't want to shorten lives. That's not something we're into.
Yeah.
Okay, so you want to talk about fast days?
Yeah, so we spoken about whomever can bless and drinking, but obviously it gets challenging when we come to fast days. Now, I think we could really break it down into two different categories of fast days. We have the sort of the minor fast days, and then we have Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur, which are two entirely separate categories. I think what people don't know about is the awareness on minor fast days. Perhaps the most appropriate person to be consuming the wine is the mother of the baby.
Yes.
And so
that
she
is brought up.
She very much is a participant in the drama in what's going on. And she has a clear out. She it's a clear out from fasting, yes. Which is that she's recovering. It's been a week basically since she gave birth. And so she's a very appropriate and fitting person to receive this wine.
She is. Now I will tell you from what I've seen. Mm-hmm. From what I've seen, even on minor fast days, we are so reticent to do this on the whole.
Really?
Basically what we try to do, what we try to do is we push the bris to the end of the day, which is contrary, by the way, to what's done with Britot on a general basis. On a general basis, we have the idea of Zrizim Lamakdim the Mitzvot, right? Zrizim, right?
To be zealous to perform Mitzvot, as quickly as possible.
Right. So what do we want to do? We want to do it as early in the morning as possible. And people always ask me, what about that idea? Because they say, what if I want to do it at 3:00 in the afternoon? I said, do you know how many Britot are going on in the city of Jerusalem? If everyone wanted to do it at 6, you really think it would be possible? So the idea is we want to do it early, but we understand there are mitigating factors, number one. And now those mitigating factors could be family on Zoom so that they can, you know, be part of the simcha as well, right? Especially if they can't make it to the country. Yeah. I actually did it for one of my sons even before that was a COVID issue. There were family members who couldn't come. I did it later in the day so they didn't have to get up at 1 a.m. to watch the bris. Yeah. But here, when it comes to the fast days, we push it to the end of the day.
Why is that?
We push it to the end of the day so that whole drinking aspect will be pushed till the time when we can eat. So you actually do the drinking is usually given to children who are there. Mm. You usually make the blessing and then mechalek to the children and you give it out to people, the children.
To children in general, not specifically the baby boy.
No, not necessarily the baby boy at all. Mm-hmm. Yep. So it's the same way that people do on Havdalah in general, but also the way that people do it on the Tisha B'Av or whatever it be, that, you know, whatever the 9 days, right? If on the 9 days you're doing Havdalah, you give it to the child, you're not really supposed to drink it yourself.
Right. And so I'm, and this also works. It's not just,
so we don't really see,
it's also not just with the minor fast days. It's also with Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur as well, that it's given to the kids to consume.
Correct. Yeah. The time where it gets, where there's any sort of gray area with this, is when the fast day, say Tisha B'Av, has been pushed off because of Shabbos. Mm. If Tisha B'Av has been pushed off, then you do, you usually do the bris moil. That's right. Another benefit for the moil. We all get to eat. So we, once there's people who are eating at that point, have to push the bris all the way to the end of the day. But those, you know, there are things written down that the minor fast days, the moil sandak happen on general fast days that aren't nidche, that aren't pushed off. We just say, I once actually came to my Rosh Kollel and I said, you know, I really don't fast well. Can I, you know, this, it says very clearly minor fast days, the moil can eat. And he goes, if you don't feel up to it, there are other mohalim in town who can do it. And I said, okay, I'll fast, sir. Thank you for the tochacha.
That's good.
It was rough. But yeah, thank God everything worked out. Baby was fine. I was fine. It was okay.
So basically on the fast days, everything's, the wine can be just given to the kids on any fast day, not just the lighter, not just the significant fast days, the Tisha B'Av, Yom Kippur, but also the minor fast days. Just mainly because it's not really about people themselves necessarily drinking it. It's like you were saying, it's a praising blessing. It's more right. really there. And I saw this in the writings of Rabbi David Halevi Siegel, where he says basically it's really just ultimately more about praise, the shira, that the wine is really, and it comes back to the reason why fundamentally is wine even involved with this ritual. It's about the praising of God at this special, this mitzvah, the special life, life cycle ritual.
Correct. And here it says very clearly that since it is just shevach and it's just about the shira and shevach, there is, if anyone drinks lo lugmav, right? If I don't have a full cheekful, the person who said the bracha only has a little tima, right? Only a little taste. Or if it's given to just anybody else, it's lo have bracha levatala bechlal, because it's not paragraphs and saying these praises of God. It's not about drinking itself per se.
Yeah, that's really wonderful.
And I'll just want to say one little side note when it comes to this whole idea of shevach versus mitzvah. Right. Once you get into that realm of saying whether or not it's a blessing that is praise, just a praise versus a mitzvah praise. Once I get to that, then all of a sudden you have all these things open up, because even the blessings that the father says, right? We have a blessing usually the moil says, right? Which is ala milah, right? I say that before the cut is made. Then there's two blessings that the father makes in Israel. The first is lahachniso bevrito shel Avraham Avinu, that, you know, thank you for the commandment of bringing my son into the covenant. And the last one is shechianu, that we say on all sort of happy occasions, right? So those two blessings, if the father can't say those blessings, since these are all shevach blessings, they can be given to anyone in the community. And what's wonderful about that in my, as in the way I look at things, is that then it opens it up when you have, I've had this happen quite a few times where it's a single mother by choice. And if it's a single mother by choice and there's no father there, well, if it can be given, these blessings can be given to anyone in the community, then the mother can say these blessings. And it's a wonderful sort of petach that just opens up to let other people participate.
That's really neat. That's really great. So Rabbi Leiter, this was really great. And in addition to your initiative of Magen HaBrit, which I will include a link for those, anybody interested, you also do a podcast, right?
Correct.
Okay. Correct. So what is the podcast?
So the name of the podcast is You'll Never Believe This, because it's an interfaith dialogue podcast between myself and one of my closest friends, Ralph Supper. Ralph is a Lutheran minister. And so, and as you guys know now, I'm an Orthodox rabbi. We sit down and we have conversations about almost anything under the sun, but they tend to focus a little bit in areas of obviously spirituality and religion, but we're both surfers. We both like to surf, ocean surfing. So we talk about surfing quite a bit. We started an improv and stand-up troupe together in college. So we talk about stand-up comedy a bunch. movies come up, things come, like we talk about lots of different things. But since the two of us are having this dialogue and will actually never end up being Lutheran or Orthodox, you'll never believe this. So you can find us on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Overcast, Spotify, all those places. It's a fun time. Everyone's welcome.
Awesome. Awesome. Really great to hear. All right. So Rabbi Leiter, thank you so much. This is really great. This is really enlightening. I'm glad we got to have this in-depth conversation about drinking wine at a Brit Milah. So thank you so much.
My pleasure. My pleasure.
And L'chaim.
L'chaim.
L'chaim.